Hey y'all, you're listening to Big Facts No Cap, the only podcast that's number one with all those who speak Klingon, and all those people with a ding-dong. Let's get into this episode.
Big Facts
No
Cap.
Big
Facts
No
Cap.
No Cap.
Big
Facts
No
Cap.
Big
Facts
No
Cap.
No Cap.
Big
Facts
No
Cap.
Big
Facts
No
Cap.
No cap.
So what do you think the diagram is of people who speak Klingon and have a ding-dong?
Oh, pretty overlapped. I mean, not a perfect circle, right? But it must be like 99%.
It's just the one girl from the Big Bang Theory and then guys?
And trans women.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
The woman from the Big Bang Theory, do you mean Bayan Bollock's character or Kaylee Coco's character?
I assumed that's how one of them came off as attractive to one of the men, was that they could speak Klingon.
Oh, I bet you that is in an episode, right? Even if it's not one of the main characters, that has to be an episode where the guy's like, I found the perfect girl. Yeah. None of them sound like that.
Jerry! I found the perfect girl, Jerry! There's just one problem.
Beavis, I found the perfect girl. That's what one of them sounds like.
Damn. Solid impressions today to start off. It's imperative that I found the perfect girl. She speaks a little Klingon. I said, how about you speak a little Klingon for daddy?
I'm really blanking on all the male actors' names, which is crazy that I knew Mayan Bollock and Kaylee Coco.
Wait, the actors or the characters?
The actors' names. I mean, I guess the characters' names would do good too. Sheldon, I know that one.
Yeah, that's
famously, he's from that TV show, Young Sheldon.
Young Sheldon, yeah. And Jim Parsons is the actor's name. I knew that.
That is it.
Don't ask me for the other ones.
I won't.
What's up with the guy who played Leonard actually dating Kaylee Cuoco for a while?
Oh, did that happen? That's fun.
Yeah.
I guess he spends so much time on set together.
I guess so. Everyone finds love at work, but it does feel like it has the same shock factor as the show has of him getting together with her. It's not like he's one of those guys that totally transforms in, like, photos outside of the show.
I mean, I don't know. Isn't that, like, almost a cliche, if anything, that, like, beautiful women don't always go for beautiful men?
Hey, maybe. Well, who am I to say? Who am I to say that he's not beautiful? Yeah. He might be conventionally attractive to most people.
The people who invest their time in learning fictional languages, How is that not in the DSM-5? That doesn't seem like... what's going on there?
How do you know it's not? I'm going to go ahead and ask you that.
Oh, you're right. I haven't poured through it.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't think it is. That was kind of just a mean way of me saying it's a very lame hobby.
I think it's a fine hobby. I think it's interesting enough.
Really?
I guess the argument would always be, it'd be like people who play, what's the guitar game? Guitar Hero?
Yeah.
It'd basically be that. You'd just be like, if you spent that much time learning a real language, you could go to France.
Famously, they don't let you in France if you don't know French, so.
And they don't like you.
How would that sound if a snooty French person was upset at you for not knowing French?
I can only do it in English. It wouldn't make much sense.
What type of food would they accuse you of eating a lot of as an American who doesn't speak French?
Oh, you think you'd be like, oh, you just want to eat the hamburger.
Yeah.
Thanks for setting me up for that one.
I like that you took a sip of water after, like, you were real, like, you really got into that character. You're like, my vocal cords hurt.
Yeah. I got to refresh.
Yeah, Klingon. Interesting. There's the elf language from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that made an appearance in I Love L.A. They meet Elijah Wood, and one of the girls that has a huge crush on him speaks Elvish to him.
There's Smurf language.
Is that true? Isn't that just calling everything Smurf?
I think it's calling everything Smurf, but I think you could learn it. You could learn the intonation that you add to the words.
Oh, yeah. That was how Pierce big-leagued me the other day. He was talking something about... For some reason, we were talking about speaking Mandarin, and I said ni hao, and he was like, you technically didn't say hello. You said aunt or something like that, and I was like, okay, whatever.
Esperanto? I guess that's not from a fictional universe.
I tried learning that for a while. Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Was it like, if I learn this, I'll know English, Spanish, and French. It'll be perfect.
No. In high school, I did a program where you had to do extracurriculars for any amount of time to fill time to do 150 hours of, like, some kind of thing to build your high school resume. And so one of the things I did was language learning.
Mm-hmm.
That was the reason I volunteered at Pets, Inc. That was the reason why I coached U5 soccer. I don't think I used any of that for applying for school, though. I think I just kind of did it to do it. Coaching U5 soccer was the worst. The parents were terrible.
Yeah. That's funny when those things match up with the stereotype about them.
Yeah, no, kids were fine. Kids were great. It was those Southern parents.
Southern parents.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. What else has been going on this week?
Nothing. Let's see. No, I didn't do much this week. I went to go, my only meeting roundup is I went to go watch a movie at the Dreamland called Bubble Bath. It is a 1980 Hungarian psychedelic animated movie. And it has that really classic background where it's like, yeah, the director hated how clean and pristine Disney movies were. So he was like, what if we did a really weird, crazy, surreal animated film about really mundane situations? So it's just about a guy who has cold feet and doesn't want to get married to a lady. But like, it's a crazy ass movie. It's really fun. And it's a musical.
Mm.
Yeah. The main intro song, you can only find it on SoundCloud or YouTube. But I did like throw it on for a couple of drives because I did like it so much.
You
it's
said
like
it was
psychedelic rock song.
What decade did you say it was from?
Like 1980.
Cool.
Yeah.
It feels. Do you ever get amazed by how much animation there is? Because it's like, to me, the idea that there's like infinite amounts of live action movies, like I could never find enough movies that I would be bored of. Like, you know, there isn't something else great to discover, obviously, with movies. But with like animated movies, it just feels like it takes so many people and so much drive and effort. Sometimes I'm like, I'm surprised that that's not like an expendable asset, that there's still that many like just great animated movies you haven't heard of.
Yeah, I mean, for like the time or whatever and how they were made, it's insane that these things were saw the light of day. Nowadays, you know, Zootopia 2 has had like one of the highest grossing openings of all time. So I don't know.
Shout out to Zootopia 2.
Yeah, Zootopia.
Should we revisit? It's been years since I think we talked about on the pod my theory that Zootopia is actually a pro-racism movie and problematic.
Oh, because you think the analogy doesn't make sense?
The analogy doesn't make sense. In a world, if the races were actually as different as animals are to each other, then racism would be a valid construct.
Interesting. That's what you took away from it?
That's how I feel. And I feel like it, by positing that as an analog, it's kind of covertly sending a racist message to the audience.
And how do you feel about Elemental?
Oh, I never watched that. What's the...
I think it's literally the same thing and the same critique that people have of it. It's like, if people were actually fire and water, no, they shouldn't be hanging out.
Yeah. From what I remember, it's been a while since I saw it. In the Zootopia universe, the carnivores actually eat the herbivores. Now, I don't know what race is supposed to be carnivore and what race is supposed to be herbivore, but if that was actually...
You don't know.
If that was actually the world we lived in, yes, it seems like we should segregate.
Interesting.
And so by even positing that as a okay metaphor for humanity, I think they've conceded to racists, and so Zootopia is a racist movie.
I mean, a big part of it is that the gazelle is Shakira, so Latino people are the herbivores.
Mm. And there's snakes in the grass when it comes for Latino people. Everybody else is against y'all.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm really mixing metaphors here. There's tigers in the bush, not snakes in the grass.
Mm. How does that fix it?
Because tigers attack gazelles.
Wait, you think tigers are what are eating gazelles?
Lions?
Yeah, there you go. It's a little closer, buddy.
You think a tiger's never eaten a gazelle?
I wouldn't say you're not, like, as far off as possible, but you were a little bit far off.
Okay. It's because I was thinking about the sexy tiger dancers from Zootopia 1.
Oh, you're always thinking about that, though.
I'm always thinking about the sexy tiger dancers from Zootopia 1. How kinky do you think the Zootopia world gets?
What does that question mean? Break that down for me.
In the movie... you know, honestly, I don't know.
Okay,
I was hoping you would interpret it and come back with something fun.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with me today. This is the second time I've been talking to someone over Zoom and had to say, what does that question mean? Yeah, anything that you watched this week or anything like that?
It was Thanksgiving week this week. So with my parents, I was watching the show Death in Paradise.
Oh, yeah. You were loving it.
It's a BBC show. We watched the Christmas specials for our Brits. You might know what that is. And damn, what a wild show. It's a murder of the week show about a British man. It's a fish out of water story of him having to be a investigator on a Caribbean island of St. Marie. And let me just break down one of the holiday specials. There is a podcaster and she's doing true crime podcasting and she goes to the island to research a missing child from like 20 years ago.
Mm.
She's shot and killed in the swamp where the missing child was thought to have been lost and died. The entire episode plays out, and the conclusion that everybody comes to, and by the way, every episode ends with every single person who's been in the episode, suspect, innocent person, they're all sitting
around. Dance number.
No, every suspect or person who's been involved in the plot at all is all sitting around while the British man tells you exactly what happened. But like, even nice. The person who's guilty is sitting around, not handcuffed, hearing him break down what happened.
And they're just sweating the whole time?
They know that he knows. Like, he's already confronted them, but then he just gets everybody back together to let them know.
Circle up real quick?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Let's do a quick circle up.
The plot that he unveils at the end is that the woman who was murdered was shot by the missing boy's twin brother, who had identity dissociative disorder. So he thought
we've done that episode before.
So he thought he was his own twin, shot her, but she actually had a flask in her pocket. So when he shot her, he didn't kill her, but he didn't realize he shot her because he thought he was his twin brother who'd gone missing 20 years before. So she wasn't killed. But then another man came by and killed her. This other man was a man that when the original kid had originally gone missing, he thought he'd killed him by running over him with his car. So he'd thrown the body over.
But he had a flask in his pocket.
So he'd taken the little kid's body after he ran him over with a car, and he'd thrown his body into a swamp. But then a storm came and actually swept the body away. The body, found by a fisherman, actually turned out to be alive. So the kid actually was never dead 20 years ago. He grew up on a neighboring island to become a full adult.
Of course.
Also, there had been a psychic who had been pretending to know everything throughout the episode, but it turned out he'd actually just traveled to the neighboring island, seen the kid grow up. He was actually the one that gave the tip to the podcaster about the story. That's why she'd come to investigate the story before she'd been fake murdered by the twin who'd stayed on the original island and then real murdered by the guy who thought he'd murdered the other twin.
Mm-hmm.
You keep it up with all that?
No, that don't make sense. I could spit it back to you right now.
That is every episode I saw, was some shit like that. It was bonkers. The plots were out of control. I don't know who comes up with this stuff, but it was like, it was definitely so bad it's good territory. It made no sense. It was so convoluted. There was always like three characters too many. They were always all semi-guilty, but there was always like four crimes going on to mislead you. I don't know. It was wild.
And your parents were guilty watching this, or were they like, this is pretty good television?
No, they like it. I mean, I liked it too. I can't really say I was like against it. I was like, I want to see more. Fucking show. Yeah. Wild. Also, another part of the fish out of water story is that he loves chicken and chips, and he gets upset that everybody on the island eats seafood. And since we were watching the holiday special, it was like they'd all be having like a seafood boil and so happy about it. And he'd be grumpy until somebody was like, and we got you a plate of chicken and chips. And he'd be like, wee.
I mean, fish and chips is right there. And he's British.
Yeah, but I think that'd be too similar to everybody else eating seafood. So they had to go for chicken and chips.
Yeah, that's what it had to. Okay, interesting. He had to go on a chicken shop date.
Yeah. So that had to be what he wanted. And of course, for our American listeners, chips, meaning French fries in this context.
Yeah, of course, but more of like a steak fry.
More of like a steak fry. And you have it with vinegar for some reason. Or the malt for the fish. I don't really know.
Yeah, a little bit of both, I think. Sometimes you mix it all up.
Yeah, I like the vinegar at Five Guys in my ketchup. I like to get a little vinegary ketchup going.
Ooh, yeah, I don't mind that either.
It is interesting that Five Guys is the only place that feels the need to give vinegar as a condiment.
I mean, I don't know. It's pretty good. It is a weirdly British sensibility, though. I was just talking to some friends about, I don't know why Five Guys came up, but it was just like the classic conversation of people being like, we went there, and it was just three of us, and it ended up being like $80. And I was like, yeah, I know. It's still pretty good, though.
Most companies only have to pay one CEO. They have Five Guys up there. Of course it's going to be more expensive.
Yeah. And they got so many potatoes.
That is part of the marketing, right? Do you think it's just like bricks in there? Do you think those are actually bags of potatoes?
Oh, yeah. They just have like one layer on top.
Or wait, are those peanut bags or are they potato bags?
I think if they're peanut bags, they're not anymore. They took that out of the stores during COVID, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, RIP.
Oh, no, the one I go to now still has peanuts.
They brought it back?
They brought it back to some, I guess.
Well, nice.
Shout out to Five Guys. I don't care what people say. I still think it's, even as expensive as it is, it's still the best burger you can get.
Yeah.
I mean, for fast food burger.
Yeah. I mean, by far the most expensive, but very, very good.
I will say, after trying In-N-Out, I think when we were doing the episode, I said different, but about as good. But I think in retrospect, Five Guys beats it.
Yeah.
I think that's a controversial opinion.
But what about a Shake Shack?
Oh, for sure. For sure beats a Shake Shack.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right, welcome to Burger Roundup.
Welcome to Burger Roundup. Man, where did we go wrong in life doing a podcast and not a food tube channel?
I don't know if that would have worked as well across the pond or however far we are, whatever you call it. I was going to say there is some pretty big news going on right now. There's no global news to talk about, but I think there are like 3 or 4 major podcasts that are shutting down or have announced that they're shutting down. And more like YouTube ones, like YouTubers who had podcasts on the side. A lot of them are like, either this isn't making money anymore, or this isn't worth the time anymore. So really, we're kind of almost ending the era of podcasts now.
Oh, that would be kind of cool. Yeah, if podcasting went back to people who actually wanted to do it instead of
instead of Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, Parks. I recently was scrolling through and I saw Parks and not Memories, but Parks and Remembering.
Farts and Procreation?
Yeah, which was Parks and Recreation, I guess, like kind of like Office Ladies sort of podcast, which that felt egregious to me. Although they were on the 4th season, so this is old news.
Oh, wait, who is it from the show?
Gary or Jerry, you know, the joke is his name changes, and I assume somebody who was a writer.
Mm.
The other person on the cover wasn't like immediately recognizable as one of the actors.
I think I knew of that one's existence now that you talk about it, yeah.
I don't know. What would be the funniest show to find out that there was a podcast roundup of the old, like just remembering it and talking about the old days of being on that show?
I think this is too niche, but I think one of the correct answers would be Fooly Cooly, because it's an anime with 6 episodes, but... So that would be a very funny...
I think Alan Gregory would be the best, and Jonah Hill needs to do the podcast.
Yeah. They actually get Jonah Hill for it.
They get Jonah Hill.
It's him and John Rash. Is that the guy?
I have no idea.
The principal from Community.
Oh, that was his dad? They really made the one of his dads yeah. look just like him. Wow.
You know, there's not a 0% chance. That's why I thought of it.
Cool. You want to get into the theme?
Yeah, the theme that I don't have. Oh, should we have looked up the Wikipedia page before this? Maybe that would have been a smart idea.
Yeah, I don't even think I know all 5 of the love languages. I know there are 5.
Fire, water, earth, air, long ago, and then lava? No, we're talking love languages, which, I mean, I can talk about it in general of, like, the stuff that I've heard about it, but I've never looked into it too much. The only thing that I know is Adrian's going to be a classic cynic and talk about how he's pretty sure the research on it is not only debunked, but I think it's, like, the thing where... Like there the Myers-Briggs stuff.
I think it was like just a person came up with
it. It was just one psychiatrist who was like, here's my idea of how this works, and you know, my source is my ideas. So I'm going to write a book about it.
Yeah, what can you do?
Yeah, you're allowed to do that.
You're allowed to have ideas and just be like, what if this was true? And tell people
about
it.
In this country, at least for now, yeah.
All right, Adrian, I looked it up. Do you want to know the 5 love languages?
I want to guess. There's gifts. There is words of affirmation. There's touch. Shit, what are the other ones? The obvious joke here is to say something really nasty, but I'm not going to do that. Anal. that's beautiful. There's nothing nasty about that. And then Djibouti.
You were missing quality time and acts of service.
Right.
I
know that my friend Coleman was into it for a while. I can't remember why we were talking about it, but he was talking about something. Oh, I think he was talking about how Phil and I are touchy, and he likes that because he's talking about how touch is one of his love languages or something.
We've talked about it on the podcast before, and I said receiving gifts was mine because that felt like a good way to manipulate people into giving me things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if there's one thing Paul needs, it's more stuff.
Give me.
I need to buy my Secret Santa stuff today. I think I've been told, I don't know if this fits neatly into a category, but I've been told that I show affection through feeding people a lot.
Which sort of makes sense. That's funny, because I see you as somebody who receives affection by getting fed, because you're kind of like a Kirby character to me.
Yeah, like a Pac-Man of some sort.
Yeah, you're kind of a Pac-Man-esque person in my eyes.
Which when that person said that, I think what they meant was that literally I used to do that as a bit a lot, which was like actually feed people their food. But I think it actually did resonate with me in the sense of like I've sometimes cooked a meal that I think is really good, and I'll just bring a little Tupperware of it to trivia for Pearson Nicole or something like that. Like,
aww.
But yeah, I know I've been known to do that. Not a baker though. Baking's always the easier way to do that though.
Yeah, you like to get baked, not bake. Come on.
Hell yeah, brother. I'm straight up bringing like chili casserole to people.
Okay. Do you want to know how to communicate each one of these love languages and things to avoid for a person with this love language?
Ooh. Oh yeah, we should. Is there a compatibility rule for this? Are you supposed to have someone with an opposite?
We can look that up next, but
all right, hit me.
This is based on Chapman's 5 love languages. For words of affirmation, you're supposed to communicate it with kind words, encouragement, praise, compliments, notes, and cards. Things to avoid with a person who likes words of affirmation: criticism, unkind words, not acknowledging achievements or effort.
Okay, interesting. Because he spent a lot of time on that.
Quality time person. Of course, you want to give them undivided attention, active listening, planning activities together, creating memories. Would you like to know what you don't things to avoid with somebody who needs quality time?
Inactive listening.
That's a good one. Weirdly enough, they actually didn't put that there. It's extended time apart, distractions while together, interrupting and dismissing, acts of service. For that type of person, you want to help with chores, sharing responsibilities, doing unexpected and helpful tasks. Things to avoid is broken promises, not helping out, creating more work for the other person.
Oh, did I tell you that I ran an errand for a friend today? Very, like, errand style errand. I had to deliver a marriage certificate to the, like, government office in Sacramento, because it was due today. It had to be within 10 days of the ceremony happening, and so I went, I dropped off the thing, I had to get a number, I had to wait. The lady looks at it and she's like, "Are you the groom?" And I was like, "Is this one of those things where like I'm doing something illegal and I have to say yes, or can I just say no and it'll be okay?" You know those kind of situations where you're like, "Am I supposed to say yes or no right now?"
I get what you're saying. You're like, "Is there a conversation tree going on where if I say the wrong thing, it ends everything badly?"
Yeah, exactly.
And what did you say? How did that play out?
I assumed that the person I was doing this for knew what they were talking about and wasn't going to send me to go do something I wasn't allowed to do. So I said no. The lady looked for another minute and said, "Okay, well, you can tell them it's accepted."
Cool. When you said you had to do an errand for somebody, yeah, I was not expecting it to be almost, if that felt like an Animal Crossing quest.
Yeah, a little bit, right? It's kind of fun. They paid me 50 acorns.
For somebody who likes receiving gifts, Adrian, if you could believe it or not, you want to give them thoughtful gifts and gestures. You want to craft something and nice surprises. Things to avoid for somebody who likes receiving gifts: meaningless or generic gifts, forgetting gifts for special occasions. Things to avoid.
I didn't get you anything for our 5-year.
For physical touch, you want to do hugs, kisses, holding hands, affectionate touch, and sexual intimacy. And things to avoid are neglecting physical intimacy, extended periods of distance. And for somebody who you know, physical touch is their love language, Adrian, one of the main things to avoid is, finally on this list, physical abuse. Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That's a good idea.
Yeah. I don't know if this, like, obviously I don't know how much of this infographic actually falls in line with what the book says, but that seems asinine. Every single thing on the things to avoid really seems like something that you should avoid with anybody. Like, none of those are...
I love generic gifts.
Yeah. And me, physical abuse, perfect.
All right, wait, do we have a thing about compatibility networks, or what's the...
Oh yeah, I can look that up.
I mean, we're not doing a quiz at the end to see what our love language is, so do you want to say what you actually think your combination is?
I don't know, I think
we're all a little bit of all of them, brother, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, here you go. We do have a compatibility graph. Okay, it's saying that a physical touch person has low well, I mean, it's a whole grid, so I'm not going to go through all of them. Is there anything you're particularly interested in?
Who should a gift giver be with?
Receiving gifts should be with somebody else who likes to receive gifts or do acts of service. Medium with a physical touch person. Sense. and low for an affirmation or quality time person.
Oh, yeah. Words mean nothing.
Words mean nothing. Yeah. It kind of, I mean, running my eyes across this, it kind of breaks down into what you would think, like the wordy ones versus the, like, yeah.
The touchy gimme gimme. When I was in the living room earlier, an Amazon package came, and it was an unwrapped one, which is funny. I didn't know they still did that. But apparently my roommate got one of those lamps that like gives you natural light for when it's dark.
Aww.
And I saw it, and I was like, mood, dog. It has been too dark here lately.
Outside of the framework of the actual book, do you have anything where it's like something people consider nice that, or like, I don't know. Have you ever been like, cut it with that? I know it's supposed to be nice, but I find something like that annoying.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, my first girlfriend really hated any time I was arrogant, even if it was like a joking arrogance. She found it very unattractive. Just to be like, if I said a joke and it landed really well, and I was like, man, I'm so fucking funny. She'd be like, I don't like that.
Interesting.
I don't know if that's the best example. It's just what I thought of off the top of my head.
Yeah, what I was teeing myself up for was the pet names always like kind of land on my ears weird. I think if it's like a honey or a sweetie, like babe, especially too early, it just like, it really grates on my ears in a real weird way. Was that having teed you up? Any other ideas of things that are like, oh, these are sweet relationship things, but like, man, not for me.
I'll tell you what, when I do grand gestures, it really depends on whether or not people think I'm conventionally attractive. That makes the line between creepy and romantic. And I'm going to go right on Reddit about that real quick.
Okay.
So, I'll say that.
I think you're the first person to ever observe that, so this is going
to
be...
Yeah, I'm the first person to observe a lot of things, Paul. I'll tell you what, it really grinds my gears.
Remember when our culture... I mean, not that the guy you're pretending to be isn't annoying, but remember when nice guys were, like, a big problem in a lot of people's minds, and it's like, oh, okay, it just feels like something that's annoying more than important.
Hey, they were nice, and now they're all lonely. Now we're all lonely.
Yeah. We're okay. I like how that switched.
It's the male loneliness epidemic. Yeah. I identify as a man,
And I identify as an epidemic.
That's true. Are you supposed to use these for friendships at all, or is that
no idea? But it feels like you could, right? None of them feel completely foreign to friendships.
I guess I would agree. Don't abuse me, Paul.
But come on, man! It's so funny when you're running away all scared. I'm trying to punch you.
You're like, get on over here.
Get over here. I'm
gonna you're get playing you. That Mario Judah song.
We're always doing a Benny Hill thing when we're hanging out. It's you running away from me, I'm like swinging a big bat. I have a police baton for some reason, and I'm running behind you.
Yeah. I'm just going waka 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 while I'm running away. All right, you want to get into an article?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so this is Dear Prudence, classic. This one has to do a little bit about loving and language, but not exactly about love languages. I've been with my husband for about a year, and we moved to Sweden about 6 months ago. He was born and raised in Sweden, but moved to the US for university 25 years ago. I don't speak Swedish well, but I was able to find a job where I can work entirely in English, and it is quite easy to get around day to day with English. Even so, I've been taking Swedish classes in the evening after work, even before our move. I enjoy the classes, do all the homework, order in Swedish at restaurants, etc. While I'm enjoying getting better at the language, I'm running into problems at events for my husband's family. While they're all fluent in English, they prefer to speak in Swedish. I completely understand that. Swedish is the language of their family. I wouldn't expect them to switch to English at every event just for me. I can listen and catch the gist of 70% of what they're saying, but speaking is still very difficult for me. I've asked if they can speak Swedish and I can respond in English until my Swedish is actually intelligible, but they declined that option. They said it's hard to switch back and forth between English and Swedish, which I do understand. My strategy now is just trying my best to listen and understand everything, but I mostly stay quiet unless I can use my basic Swedish to add something to the conversation. I'm genuinely trying my best to speak up when I can, but I don't want to detour a conversation while I slowly and incorrectly say something, and then everyone spends 5 minutes trying to figure out what I meant. Sometimes my husband translates for me, but I can't always hang at his side and keep him from doing his own things. Some members of my husband's family have told him that they find me distant and wish that I would try harder to communicate with them. I recognize that I haven't gotten to know them well and haven't opened up to them, but I feel that they're not giving me a lot of grace with the language learning. I wasn't great with languages when I took them in high school. Languages just aren't a talent of mine. I know there's more. I know there's more one could always do to learn a language more quickly, but I have a busy job, my pre-existing hobbies, and I'm trying to build a social life. Do you have any advice? Not for language learning tips. I get so many of those, but for strategies to be at events with my husband's family and not seem aloof until my Swedish is better. I feel a bit crazy, like my in-laws think most people would be fluent in Swedish after a year of evening classes. I know that's not true because my teachers have laughed at that timeline, but it feels like that's what's expected of me. From Language Barrier.
Well, these people sound annoying.
You mean the teachers who are like, oh, you think you can learn this in a year? No, you need to employ me for at least 5 years.
Oh, you think it's a scam? They could teach a turn a year, they're holding back.
I mean, it seems like an interesting way to feel about that.
No, I bet the family who's like refusing to speak in English, and they'd be like, why are you so distant? And she's like, can I just respond in English since you understand it? And they're like, oh, that's so hard for us. It's like, okay, well, it's clearly harder for her to learn Swedish, so maybe you speak in Swedish. If she can understand that, she is actually learning pretty quick. So let her respond in English so she can
Understand your hergish burga hergast.
If she can understand your schmerch bursch. If she can understand that bullshit. Fucking smurf ass language.
Can you imagine that? Like, it's not that hard. Like a hergish burga herg. No, I didn't know the Epstein list. Interesting. He's on it. Oh, okay. Yeah, no. I mean, a dentist seems like a weirdly low-level person to be on the list, but it's cool that you know him.
You really start each one with Hergesberg. That's like really your like entry phrase into Swedish.
Well, that's because I actually know what that means.
That's your real Sasha and Malia, but for Swedish.
Smasher? No, I don't want to offend any Swedish people in our audience, but I'm sure it's a beautiful language.
I'm sure it's a beautiful language. Not as beautiful as Norwegian or Finnish, but...
Oh, that's fighting words.
It seems like this family's taking a real obnoxious position here to be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've been in this situation before, and... well, no one complains about me, though, because it's not like I'm in the out-group. It's usually family, and so it's like... I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that. I've never tried to impress people who I was in a situation like this before.
Do most of your cousins know Spanish?
All of them do, yeah.
Did you and Dorley ever feel like, damn, they're really leaving us out?
No, because they would usually speak English. I mean, I guess at family events, it was usually older people.
Did they ever do like the fun thing where when they wanted to keep a secret from you and Dorley, they spoke in Spanish?
No, I mean, I guess that's what I'm saying is like, I was never that interested in what my aunts and uncles were talking about. So I was fine to chill with anybody who was willing to speak English with me. Gotcha. That is crazy. You can't find a single person who's willing. Maybe it's like a dinner table than less than of a party.
Yeah. I have the same thing with my cousins. Obviously, I knew Arabic, but not as well as everybody else. So a lot of times that conversation would escape me. And a lot of them, it was always annoying because it's one of those things where I don't know if you ran into this, but like, well, I guess you weren't trying to learn Spanish when you were a kid, but a lot of times each person wants to speak in the language they know less to get practice in. So I'm like wanting to speak in Arabic so I could get better at Arabic, and they're trying to speak in English because they want to improve their English. And it's like,
yeah, I mean, that's the thing that you hear abroad a lot. I can't remember which countries are which, but there's the ones like the French where they get mad at you if you speak English. They're the other ones where, like, a lot of Nordic places are like, oh, yeah, they just, if you try and speak their language, they tell you just to speak English because they can speak it better than you can speak their language.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Or there are other places, like, a lot warmer places, like a lot of Spanish-speaking places where people are like, oh, they just like if you try. They don't really, they're fine to be patient with you and, like, help you try and figure it out.
Mm. Which seems like such a universal way to talk about people. It's like, not every French person can be an obnoxious asshole, and not every islander can be like a chill, nice guy. That can't possibly be how a culture works.
First day that we went to the bank in Cuba, where the guy got mad at me for trying to do it in Spanish, and then he was like, let's just do this in English.
Man.
Shout out to one of my favorite episodes of The Simpsons where, is it Lisa or is it Milhouse who tries to learn Italian? And he goes up to the Italian chef in town and is like, can you teach me? And he's like, oh, no, I only speak how you say your broken English. I don't speak Italian. Oh, it's Lisa wants to learn, but Milhouse knows because he has an Italian grandmother that he spent the summers with. That's what it is. She ends up teaching her.
So this person is trying to learn a new language. I will point out, not a romance language, which would have been more appropriate for a love languages column.
Yeah, but it's someone that she's in love with who's a big blonde hunk.
Oh. Ooh, you think so? You think she didn't find the one ugly Swede?
Do you know, talking about the universality in which people speak about things, people do talk about the Netherlands and Sweden as if, like, everyone's a supermodel.
I know, and some of them are, like, the Twitchers, and those people are so ugly, so it's like, you know, they're not all models. I think streaming culture has done more to discredit the notion that all Swedish people are attractive than anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that and metal music.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, okay.
Oh, yeah, we need to actually solve this problem.
Yeah. For this woman with her rude family, for her rude Swedish family.
In-laws. You should try and corner one person and make them speak to you. That way you're not breaking up the whole conversation.
Yeah, if they think you're distant, maybe you just need to become friends with one or two where it would be okay to speak English. Because the reason they're not speaking Swedish is because it's like a big family get-together. And that's going to be hard to get everybody to switch to their second language in like a big get-together setting. So you just need to do more one-on-one hangouts.
She's got a social life. She's got hobbies. She's learning Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's got to hang out with these people one-on-one.
Yeah, that is a lot.
I was saying corner people at the party, but you know.
Oh, corner people at the party.
Oh, isn't Google Translate pretty immediately helpful now?
Even though it is pretty immediate, still think it's, what would you call it, off-putting to watch somebody talk into their phone and wait for
it. I guess if the issue is that you're distant, yeah, then sounding like a robot doesn't make you any better.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty alienating experience, too. I think it's good enough for, like, business transactions and talking to people in public, not maybe like, familial.
I got told to download it for a training for like accompaniment for like taking people to ICE appointments. Like it's supposed to be pretty procedural. It's not it's not for like saying, hey, how's it going? what's up, Brody?
Can you imagine after you take the people to the ICE appointment, you're like, so you want to hang out? What's going on? You like The Office?
How do you say with Bracken? Yeah.
That gym guy cracks me up. You want to watch The Office together? I'm just looking for friends mostly. That's why I do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Have we given authentic advice yet? Sillier advice.
Everybody learns a third language.
Ooh.
So that you're all equally bad at it.
Start doing what Adrian was doing and start making silly Swedish sounds and see if they correct you. Or just
you mean speaking perfectly fluent Swedish?
Speak perfectly fluent Swedish. Hope that when you make random sounds that through pure luck and randomness,
process
you land on perfectly intelligible Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
Could work.
Could
if you
work.
Get really, really lucky, could work.
Either that or guess you gotta stay by your husband's side more often, but sounds like you're being a nag.
Cool, I'm good to read the answer.
Alright. Here we go, from Prudy Giuliani. It's not you, it's them. They find you distant and wish you would try harder, but they also said no thanks when you offered a reasonable way to be able to speak with them. Sorry, that was a question. They said no thanks when you offered a reasonable way to be able to speak with them? These people don't like you. Don't like your husband. Don't like that he married someone with your background. Wish he'd end up with his high school girlfriend. Or are worried that you'll lure him back to the States. I have no idea what exactly is going on, but it's not about your aptitude for picking up Swedish. There are a lot of ways to bridge this gap, if everyone wants to, and if you've already tried. Plenty of people who speak different languages have fallen in love and gotten married. With technology, there are so many options for communication that go beyond warm smiles and gestures, which would go a long way here, if these family members were willing to offer them. Stop scrambling to please them and talk to your husband about what you want your relationship with your in-laws to look like, given that they won't let you talk to them, and then hold that against you. That's it.
I don't know if I really assumed that it was as malicious, but
yeah,
maybe.
No, she really did. She really thought they were so disapproving of her. I kind of see that as, I saw it more of like a you don't realize that that's not rude for them type thing, maybe like a cultural barrier.
Yeah, that's kind of how I saw it. But I mean, she could be right. I mean, it really maybe is a very reasonable thing to be like, can I just respond in English? I mean, she's already gone pretty far if she feels like she can understand a lot of what they're saying. Just wants to respond in English. It is crazy that they're like, no, please don't make me think in English. How dare you?
Yeah, the answer did make me think about how the thing that I was actually trying to find a column for when I was Googling for this was something about a man and woman who were in a relationship but didn't speak the same language at all. Like, there was no crossover, just because that always fascinates me.
Also, as somebody who speaks another language, it's really not hard to reply in a different language. Like, maybe it's not the most natural thing in the world, but it's not difficult. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, I can't say enough about it. Yeah.
Cool. You want to get into my call?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm trying to pull it up right now.
So I picked a really obvious one, Adrian, one that in the question acknowledging the idea of love languages. So it's a Dear Annie Lane. Dear Annie, I've been married to a wonderful man for 7 years. We have a strong, loving relationship. However, after Valentine's Day, I found myself feeling a bit sad. In all our years together, my husband has never given me flowers, not for Valentine's Day or anniversary or any special occasion. Gifts in general don't seem to be on his radar. Instead, he prefers for us to split the cost of a nice dinner or a getaway, which I do appreciate. But deep down, I wish he would do something romantic just for me, like the surprising me with flowers or even a small necklace with a heart on it. It's not about the price, but the thought behind it. I don't want to sound ungrateful, but I also don't want to keep feeling disappointed year after year. How do I talk to him about this without making him feel like he's failing as a husband? I'd love your advice on how to navigate this conversation and maybe help him understand why these small gestures mean so much to me.
Well, we've never said this before, but it's almost as if that this person could take what they wrote to the advice column and have their husband read it.
That does seem like perfect advice.
Yeah. Well, actually, I don't know. Do you think
how sensitive is this man that, what did she say, without hurting his feelings? I don't understand why the very basic three words, I want flower. Would hurt his feelings.
I was going to say, do you think there's any credence to the idea that some people might come at this with, which is like, this isn't the type of thing that you change about a person, but I don't know.
I've been explicitly asked in multiple relationships because flowers never pop up in my mind as a gift. Because it's not something I would want to get. And maybe that is very, like, stupid, short-sighted. But I've had people be like, oh, I would like flowers. You never really get that as a gift. I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot that that's kind of like a stereotypical.
You were dating someone from the 1920s?
People want them.
Really? Interesting.
But yeah, I see what you're saying. That's different than this situation. Because I was giving gifts. Somebody was just like, hey, you don't usually think about this gift. But
you
I
would give
want
me
that.
A box of chocolates.
You never get me a heart-shaped box of chocolates. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about why are they splitting dinner but married?
What do you mean?
Is this one of those separate bank account marriages which shouldn't be called a marriage?
What? What do you mean? That's how my parents did it.
Just you're gonna be eating all that food together. You're gonna be using all that toilet paper together. What are like? Why split? Who has to get it and make that a thing?
Damn. So your goal in life is just to lose all your money to this marriage. Insane.
Okay. So you're kind of on your MRA tip, like they're gonna bleed you dry if you give them access to your buddy,
and then they're gonna get out of there. Isabel's gonna realize that she can buy herself flowers. She can take herself dancing.
You're not interested in marriage, so I guess it doesn't matter, but hypothetically, if you were going to get married, you would definitely not mix finances.
Are they richer than me?
That's actually a very good question.
I think that's my main question.
Yes, but you accidentally did the Seinfeld thing where you asked for a prenup to try to get out of the marriage, and then she said yes, and then you remembered she's richer than you.
Yeah. And then she laughs at you in a way that really hurts your feelings.
Okay.
How do you feel? Have you been asked for the necklace with a heart on it? That one also feels like, as soon as they said it, I felt like, oh, that's a classic. I do not understand why you want it, but it is a classic. I can see why.
It does feel like such a classic that it's like, you're going to look like a middle school girl.
That's exactly what I was thinking is like, are we in high school still? What is going on?
Maybe you could get him a gift. I don't know. That feels so, that feels like it might not work. And then it would only make you feel worse if you started getting him little gifts and he was like, oh, that's cool, Knicks tickets. This is going to be great. I'm going to take my bud. That he still never got you anything.
Yeah. Wait, what year is this from? You think this is that classic of a relationship? Maybe.
From February of this year.
Damn. Oh, right after Valentine's Day. That makes sense. I mean, you got to bring it up. He's never going to just start doing it.
Yeah. But she doesn't want him to feel bad about himself. How do I talk to him without making him feel like he's failing as a husband? Man, if this level of communication would make him feel like he's failing, then you guys aren't communicating enough. Do you never criticize him for anything? How great is he usually?
I don't know. Could be a Sir Mix-a-Lot question. I don't remember them saying too much about how amazing he is. I think she kind of just gave like a blasé, like he's pretty good.
I've been married to a wonderful man for 7 years.
Oh, yeah.
We have a strong, loving relationship, but also I'm terrified that the smallest criticism could send him into an existential crisis.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. And not only that, but it seems so cliche that, like, the critique of not doing this feels like something that you'd be just in the zeitgeist aware of. We should update these. What do you think a modern man should get his lady?
A modern man should get his lady AI?
Oh, just get her a ChatGPT.
Ooh, log into his ChatGPT and tell it to have a conversation with him about this.
Is that something you can do? Is that a thing?
I think you could add stuff to the memory. I don't really use this feature, but I feel like I've heard that you can tell it like facts about people. So you could probably be like, also remember this about my wife, and it'll like add it to a profile if he uses it as a personal assistant.
And then when he's using it to write a email for work, it's going to be like, and also my wife needs some chocolates.
I don't know. I mean, if the situation is that you're worried about hurting his feelings, maybe just talk about it was like a little bit more in the third person or about like fictional characters, like, oh, her husband never gets her gifts. That would I don't know.
Oh, yeah, when you see it on TV or something. Yeah.
There's probably no good way to do that without him being like, what the fuck? Is she coming at me?
Yeah, that's kind of way worse, isn't it?
Yeah. You really do just have to say, hey, I like gifts. Can you please start getting me gifts?
Yeah. Or get them for yourself. Miley Cyrus.
Oh, that's not going to make her feel good. She doesn't want a little heart-shaped necklace from herself.
Yeah, it's true.
Do you want to hear the answer?
Yeah, let's rock it. I don't know if I have that much else to say.
Everyone expresses love in different ways. Yours might be through thoughtful gift, while your husband could be through physical affection or shared experiences. Understanding these differences is key to a strong relationship. It's important to recognize your own romantic needs and communicate them openly. If receiving small, meaningful gifts makes you feel loved, let your husband know in a kind and positive way. He may not realize how much these gestures mean to you, and a gentle conversation could make all the difference. Once again, proof that we should be in the publishing game. Easy. Yeah.
Easy, light work.
We could have written that.
We basically did, yeah. And if some of these advice givers get to be three people in a trench coat, I feel like Paul and I should be allowed to do it as two people.
Oh, yeah. Wait, which advice columnist is
that, like, went down to her three children or whatever?
That's so funny that they treated her advice column like a beach house where they were like, we can't decide who gets it, so we got to split it three ways.
Yeah.
All right, Adrian, for the third segment for Love Languages, we're doing, as lovers of languages, we're doing 20 hilarious expressions in different languages, idioms from around the world. So this gives you the idiom in its original language, the English translation, and then the English kind of equivalent meaning. So we're going to slowly go through this and try to guess if from the English translation we can figure out what the idiom means.
All right.
Okay, so just to kind of like ease you into the concept, first we have in German. Oh, and we do have to try to read it in the original language. So the idiom is Morgenstund hat Gold im Mund.
All right.
And the literal translation is the morning hour has gold in its mouth, with the English equivalent being the early bird gets the worm.
Of course. Couldn't be simpler. All right. Here's the second one. Here we go. The idiom is te le yo de la tete, which means to cost the eyes of the head. To cost the eyes of the head. Cost the eyes of the head. I'm going to assume... Oh, wait. Are we buzzing in at the same time, or what are we doing?
Yeah. First person to say it gets it.
I mean, well, I think we both have to give a guess, but my assumption is that this is, like, the price is too high for what it is.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right, but maybe something to do with, like, you're being stupid in a way where it's like you're not seeing what's in front of you.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's an interesting take. I don't think it's correct, but we'll see who's closer.
I think you're right. Yeah, okay, to cost an arm and a leg is the English equivalent. Okay, next up we have Portuguese. Brazilian Portuguese is where this idiom is from, and it's Estou cagando e andando. And it means, I'm shitting and walking.
Aren't we all?
Okay, so it's not saying, it feels like a multitasking thing about how you can't do two things at once, but it's not saying that you can't shit and walk. It's saying
I'm walking and shitting over here.
Maybe it's I'm overwhelmed because it's saying I'm doing too much. I'm multitasking too much.
You think that's what it is?
It's not saying don't shit and walk. It's saying I'm shitting and walking.
So you're saying I've got my hands full.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's how I would translate it. I don't know. Am I supposed to differentiate myself for the sake of differentiation?
If you want to.
I'm shitting and walking. It's their version of that meme about how, like, you're pissing and vomiting and crying and coming at the same time.
It's I couldn't care less.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. Sure.
In retrospect, you get I'm shitting and walking. I couldn't care less. I'm shitting and walking.
I'm shitting and walking, baby. Couldn't care less. You lost your bet of $1 million.
I'm shitting and walking.
Yeah, see? There you go.
Okay, makes sense now. Now that I've said it, it feels right.
Yeah, kind of. I think it kind of gave it the right stank to it. The next one is Spanish. The idiom is tomar el pelo, to grab someone's hair.
Is it like to grab their hair because they're puking in the toilet? Is it nice or is it like, oh, you're yanking their hair? You're playing dirty. I'm going to go with it means you're playing dirty, I think.
I'm going to go with to grab someone's hair. I think grasping at straws. Maybe I'm just trying to think of like a like for like, but. Oh, to pull someone's leg.
Oh, that feels so equivalent that it's weird. Why is it just a different body, random
body
part? I was
kind of on the right track by being like, yeah, it's just grasping at straws or something. It's a grabbing motion. That's what's important about it.
Japanese next. Tenohiri wo kasu.
Oh.
It means to turn over the palm of your hand.
Oh, I have an idea. I think that probably means something about like, to put your cards on the table, like it means you're like showing your weak spot or something like that, or you're laying it all out there.
I think you're right, but to differentiate myself, I'm gonna go with my number two idea, which is something to do with like showing you don't have a weapon to like, maybe it's like a saying, hey,
showing
like
you're harmless.
Greeting sort of thing to turn the palm of your hand to show that you're a friend.
Okay, yeah, I'm not mad at that. Ooh.
To turn a cold shoulder is the English equivalent.
Shoulder.
Wow.
Oh, hey, we got Swedish. I'm going to have a fun time doing this one. All right, this one is...
Hergish Bergish.
Skage I Brevladin, which means caught with your beard in a mailbox. Oh, that one's obvious, right?
Yeah, it means my sister-in-law's a real bitch. Why is she always so distant?
Yeah, exactly. They're always saying that. It means who's in the Epstein list? no, it means caught red-handed, right? Or am I just thinking caught and caught?
Well, caught does make it seem like caught red-handed is the one thing it could mean. Caught with your... Maybe it means between a rock and a hard place. That's going to be my, like,
with your beard in a mailbox.
Just to differentiate myself from you answer.
Yeah, that could maybe be it. Oh, you should have done a different caught.
To be caught with your pants down. Oh, to be embarrassed. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up, we have Arabic. Takrir yalam alhamar. Repetition teaches the donkey.
Practice makes perfect, right? Is that not?
It feels like, yeah. That's, or maybe even, maybe it's like not teach an old dog new trick, but like even a dumb person can learn something.
That common phrase. Yeah.
Okay, English equivalent. Yeah. Practice makes perfect.
Literally, yeah. Okay. Damn, didn't know the Arabic one. Okay. The next one is Czech. It is... Jednim uchem tam druim ven. Like water on a duck's back. Isn't that just the actual...
Is that English one? Yeah. Like, yeah. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Does this one...
I always, maybe I just misunderstood it. In English, I always thought it meant water off a duck's back meant it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't bother you.
That's also how I interpreted it. So I don't know if we like have a collective delusion here or if that's how some specific piece of media used it. But that I did not think it was in one ear and out the other. I guess I can see the imagery now, but that's not what I thought that was.
Interesting. Yeah, maybe we both, because I don't think I was ever taught the definition. I might have just been... You know, creating my own backsplanation.
your own backronyms.
Next up, we got Farsi, and it is Gurito Gumkan, and literally it translates to lose your grave. Oh, this is a classic. This is a like, I'm so forgetful I could lose my own head.
Oh, is that what you thought it was?
Oh, what do you think? What's your...
I was going to say, I thought this is getting into, like, the thing that you yell at a market when someone gives you a bad price. Like, hey, go go lose your grave, buddy. How about that? How about you stick it up your ass?
Damn, this is okay.
Let's see if the translation is stick it up your ass.
You're right, it is.
Hey, come on. Yeah. See, I don't know. Yeah, as soon as I heard that, I was like, oh, yeah, we're getting into the fun ones now. We're getting into the ones where you're like, where you're talking about people's mothers.
That is so funny. I really thought it was like, I could lose any.
I could lose my own grave. That is much more good natured. That's more fun. Go lose your grave sounds more like you're giving someone an action, though. It's so clearly like you're telling somebody something they need to do.
Now that you say it, I feel like I should have gotten that.
All right, next
I should
one.
Use my test-taking skills and use the context.
Next one's Lithuanian. Lyja Kirvijas, which means it's raining axes. Oh, okay.
It's raining cats and dogs. It's heavy rain.
Yeah. Oh, it's raining cats and dogs. Now, which one? What's their idiom for chocolate rain?
Next, we got Tagalog.
Oh, they skipped 11.
Oh, interesting. I would have never noticed that.
11 was too spicy for this article.
Binyagan Nayan. Okay, what are the... Tagalog is Filipino, right?
Yeah.
And it literally means baptize it already.
Mm.
Baptize it. Get it done with?
Yeah, hurry up and do it is what it makes it seem like, yeah. Like, because, you know, they're Catholic, so they baptize the babies right when they come out, right?
Oh, yeah. You don't want to wait too long, because otherwise that baby might be doomed to eternal damnation.
Yeah, okay.
So you want to baptize it already before that baby goes to hell forever, Adrian?
I don't know how to differentiate from you, but that seems like the obvious answer, right?
Yeah, I think so. You want to check it?
Yeah. Get it over with. Yeah, use it already. The next one is Dutch. It is over Kortjes in Kalfjes Praten to talk about little cows and little calves.
Is it to gossip? Like to talk about like... You're just talking about silly things that are not even gossip, like small, like not small talk, but like, oh, you're wasting my time with this like unimportant talk.
Oh, damn it.
No, the Dutch probably respect little calves and little cows. That might be very important talk to them. They might be like
90%
on the farm.
Of them still believe in little cows and little calves. I was going to say to differentiate from you, I was going to go to where you went, which is that I think it's like talk that's unimportant and not gossip, but you changed yours. So I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it seems like unimportant talk, like a flippant talk or.
Yep. Small talk.
Okay.
I don't know. Flippant. I think I was going. Well, no, I said insignificant. I don't know.
Next up, we got Polish. Miek musi nosi, which means to have flies up one's nose.
I'm not going to let you down, Nicole. I know this one. To have flies up one's nose.
This is taking you a while. For me, it just feels like to have a bee in your bonnet, to be pissy.
I'm gonna say that it's like kissing someone's ass. It's gonna be some kind of equivalent about that.
Oh, interesting. As in, like,
I already looked at it.
Yeah. Okay. So it is kind of what I said, to have one's panties in because in a twist.
I guess multiple flies is gross, but like a bee is way worse than a fly. Like I don't know. Vietnamese, we have men miao ken miao dai dua, which means cat praises the cat's tail for being long.
I'm sure we've been slaughtering the pronunciation of everyone, but this one, especially with all the accents, is like, man.
No, they're all the same accent. They all do the same thing. I think this is like being grateful for what you have.
Oh, I thought it was being humble, you're being braggadocious.
No, I think it's like, you know, like when you do something with your big long tail and you're like, thank you, big long tail. I'm so glad I have you on me.
Okay, I'll just differentiate myself from you. I think like the cat's being a bit like, hey, cat, don't compliment yourself. You are the cat.
Too big for your britches? Okay. The Vietnamese hate their cats. Every cook praises his own broth.
Got it.
Yeah. Don't know that English translation or equivalent, but now I know it.
Okay, in Italian, we got ogni morte di papi. Every death of a pope.
Every death of a pope. Every death of a pope.
Every pope I take.
Did you also start singing at the same time?
I think just when you said that, I was like, I know where we're going.
I know where we're going.
I know what road we're going down, brother, and I'll follow you to hell.
That's the thing that Paul F. Tompkins has poisoned so many people's minds into doing the Camptown Races song anytime something fits with the syllables. So someone will just be like, yeah, like, so my, someone was just saying, my wife went to work today. And I was like, my wife went to work today. And it's like, PFT has ruined our minds. But the quickness with which he does that always makes me laugh. Okay. Every death of a pope. Is this one of those like, no, cause what would that be conveying? I was trying to think of that one saying that's like, one death is a tragedy, a thousand is a statistic. Is it something about like every death being important or something? Or
I thought maybe it was something about like how this feels like a big deal now. Like every death of a pope feels like a big, I don't know.
Oh, it makes so much sense once you look at it.
Once in a blue moon.
Once in a blue moon.
Okay, every death of a pope.
Which I guess is more opposite to what you said, but I don't feel like either of us got close.
Mm-hmm. What type of things in life do you say that for? You're like, I almost never drink tequila, but you know, once the death of a pope, I'll have a crazy night.
Maybe, yeah. That's what the Italians are big on, yeah. They get a lot of tequila over there.
I never have limoncello, but you know, once every death of a pope, I go crazy.
I never have a malort. All right, next one is gâté-san in Haitian Creole, which means rotten blood.
Does that mean gross?
Because that's nasty. I'll say that. Does it mean nasty? Because it's nasty. Haitian Creole. Rotten blood. I don't know. Good for nothing?
Oh, yeah. Maybe it means bad relative. Actually, I'm going to go with that. It must mean like...
I'm going to go with when the Crip in your neighborhood is is a bad dude.
I'm going to go with bad family.
Oh, interesting. Very one-to-one. Oh. Makes your blood boil. Yeah.
Okay, next up we got Norwegian. A snacker et fra levaren? To speak directly from the liver. That's oh, that to gotta blunt. Be you off that sauce. You're drunk as hell.
I think it just means to be blunt. I don't think it means to be drunkenly blunt. Yeah, to speak without sugarcoating.
Oh.
Which could happen because of the sauce. You don't know. I think it's Pao Zhuan Yin Yu. To cast a brick to attract jade. To cast a brick to attract jade.
I mean, it almost feels like a fishing metaphor about not using the right, like, you're not playing
for the job.
Yeah, you're not playing a good enough, like, you're not putting enough effort in for the outcome you want.
Oh, I'm going to do the, you're using the wrong tool for the job.
We were both wrong.
Okay, well, I guess that makes sense in terms of, like, distance from the language to us or whatever. Like, yeah, I guess we had no idea what that really meant.
It means tossing an idea. So I don't even know what tossing an idea really means, like, to be
where
honest.
Where do you want to go for dinner? Let me cast a brick to attract a jade. Why don't we go to Pollo Loco?
Oh, blue sky thinking is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, I think that's usually how you put it, yeah.
Icelandic. Oh, man, I really have no idea how to pronounce this. Okay, this is very few letters I recognize.
He's got to sing it like Björk.
Eolegia hofolia ibleate. And it means to lay your head in water.
Yes. I know what that means.
I'm going to say something that's... I'm just going with straight up ostriches, bury your head in the sand. I'm going to lay your head in water is to ignore things.
I think it's like a wake-up call.
And the English equivalent is to sleep on it.
Okay. Well, shit, what did we learn?
You know, I don't feel like I learned much, but I was interested the whole time. I don't know how that happens.
It was cool.
How something can be curious, but not informative.
I mean, what general rules are you supposed to apply? I mean, so I've talked before about how I looked up Guatemalan ones specifically because I asked my parents about them. And I think I've talked about it on pod before, but I don't know. Those always felt really intuitive. Like, if you don't have bread, you can use tortilla, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's what I was thinking of when I said tool for the job or whatever. But it's just like, yeah, there are alternate things that you can use for things. So I don't know. I don't know what I got out of this one.
So my big fact is we love our Swedish fans. We're really sorry about everything we said about your language and your demeanor as people.
True. Well, not about your beauty. Unless it was one of those things where if you're ugly as a Swedish person, it like makes it hard to live up to stuff or something. I don't know. Is that problematic? We think you're beautiful either way.
That's true.
And my no cap is idioms are like water out of a duck's back. We don't really know what they mean.